Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello and welcome back to the BLL Happy Hour podcast alongside Chris Rosenthal. I am Kevin Brown for Inside Lacrosse. We've got a special podcast for you here at Navy Marine Memorial Stadium in Annapolis, All-Star Game weekend. We got two of the faces of the sport with CJ Kirst of the Philadelphia Water Dogs, many people's current MVP favorite since he first stepped on the field after that Toronto Rock NLL title-winning season. And then the number three overall pick, one of the faces of the rookie class, Joey Spallina, stops by both before their accuracy challenge. Let's swing into those interviews, starting with CJ first. We now welcome on CJ Kirst onto the PLL Happy Hour podcast. CJ, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
CJ, this is pre-accuracy contest here at the PLL All-Star Game in Annapolis. Take us through your mindset. What's going to be the tactic going in?
I think I'm going to try to go for a lot of shots. So I think I'm going to go high number and get it off as quick as possible and hopefully aim all top right. So we'll see.
All top right, love it. Yeah.
They give you a chance to kind of get some time on your own to practice for this, or is it just on your own time?
They gave us a second to see how the targets were working at practice yesterday. So, but not many reps, only a few.
How do you do?
I think I did all right. Yeah, we'll see. Competing against pretty good players. So, they did really well. I was hearing the chains going a lot when they were shooting. So I see. We'll see how it goes.
You make the little remake of the Christmas commercial.
Yeah,
thing. So that's cool, actually. Making the pipes ring, but the targets. Now, CJ, I appreciate you coming on in a fun environment here. It's a fun place to play. You just completed your first PLL All-Star game. Gears coming up after your injury, as a rookie, now as a second year. What was it like, the play-in, isn't
it? It was great. I think it's just a ton of fun to be able to share a locker room with guys who compete against every weekend and, to just create those relationships off the field. And then to be able to play, this weekend at Navy, I think it was pretty incredible, milestone, I think, for my lacrosse career, something I'll probably talk about for a while, just having, this kind of opportunity as a professional lacrosse player. So it's definitely a great weekend.
Now, when you get all the teammates together from the East going against the West, were there any people in particular you were looking forward to getting to finally be on the same team with?
I know playing with the Cannons, my brothers are really close with Ethan Rall, Marcus Holman, and Coulter Maxey. So I think, competing against Coulter, all of college and then being able to share, a left side with him when we were both either running midi or the other guy was in on attack. So I would say playing with Coulter was a ton of fun.
Two very talented lefties. CJ, you were unlucky to get any of your six shots to go today, but that's for a pretty sick tweener effort from you there. How much did you want that one to go?
I wish that one, but obviously it's a fun game, so I had to try to do something. I didn't really get many shots on net. Definitely think I could have performed a little bit better, which is upsetting for myself. But that was a cool opportunity, and I wish that went, but Dauber and Dobson made a great seat.
MVP Dauber. You have a chance to make up for it, though, here at the accuracy.
Yep, that's right. How much of an event like this, we're just talking about that tweener, how much of it do you kind of think of ahead of time is, let me get out and entertain the people versus, specifically trying to win the game? But, it's an exhibition, so, how much of the matter there?
I think it's a great fan experience where, you want to be able to have some fun and do some stuff they don't normally do week in, week out. So I think, just having the opportunity to go on the sideline and do some autographs in the middle of the game, or at halftime when we were doing the skills competition. I think that's just such a cool opportunity and something obviously you wouldn't do when you're competing on a weekend. But and then to highlight the kind of skills that went on during the game, I thought, just for myself being out there and just watching some of these guys do some backhands and some BTBs and stuff like that, I thought it was really entertaining. So I hope all the fans had a great time.
So you think Tierney, wouldn't it be cool with you going for an autograph in the middle of it?
Oh, absolutely not, no. So, yeah, I know that would be something he would not want to see. But
it is so cool to have you guys give him back like that, though. All these fans very much look up to you, CJ. You mentioned it's a great life experience to play here at Navy in Annapolis, the 4th of July weekend. What was it like the night before? You get to see some fireworks with the West teammates, all these all-stars?
No fireworks for us, but we were my mom came down, was able to get dinner with her on the water last night, and then just got to hang out and kind of share some time with playing against all these guys, getting to know them off the field. So it was cool just sitting down and telling stories and having that time together. So I think everyone would say it was a great experience overall.
No doubt. We wanted to get some Philadelphia Water Dogs questions in here too. So as we transition into the back half of the season, you guys are up at the top of the East standings here, just playing three games so far, coming off an NLL title. Just how much momentum do you feel individually going into the second half of the season?
Yeah, I think coming off last season, for myself, only being, I guess, in the lineup the second half, like I was really excited to come back and just be there as soon as I could after the NLL season. This locker room that we have is even implementing all the rookies, like we're in the ground running. We're finding chemistry now. Our coaches are doing a great job of putting us in the right spots, and it's just a matter of time now for everyone to get comfortable. And just know that we just have such an impactful group that every single weekend someone could step up and take over. So I think it's all credit to our leaders as well, like Kieran McArdle and Michael Sowers on the offensive end, who have stepped up for our team culture wise off the field, and I think that's a big reason why we found success.
You mentioned bringing in all those rookies, we saw a big wave of them all in one time. What kind of is the challenge or responsibility for you as someone who's been through that before to kind of go welcome those guys in, get to know everybody very quickly? Have you guys, make that work?
I think it's just instilling confidence in all the guys. For myself, coming in last year, starting off playing midfield, and playing at the PLL, it's a different game from what you're used to in college. So just knowing that the mentality doesn't change, everyone's here for a reason, and you just gotta go out there and play your game and compete as hard as you can. And Coach Tierney sets that standard for us every single weekend, and I know our rookies are doing a great job so far, and I'm excited to watch what they can do in the future.
You realize Tierney, general manager Dave Cottle, has just put up a ridiculous lineup for you guys, right? Like you look up and down this roster, like we were saying, I don't want you commenting on this, but for us, like, I can't believe Thomas McConaughey got cut. Like you guys have just an embarrassment of riches. There's only one ball. How do you kind of get players to understand, all right, maybe I do have to start playing in another role that I'm used to, whether that's Matt Collison playing a little more off ball, playing a more two game with you on that left wing? What is that going to take when you guys kind of start rolling through this?
I think that's why the coaches drafted everyone that we have. They know that each guy is super unselfish and just wants the team to win. And, when you look at our unit as a whole, it's just six guys out there going to spin it and playing together. And that's kind of where we found success, is knowing that it doesn't take an individual to take over and for us to win. So I think just having that buy-in as of now, this early in the season, is really going to motivate us moving forward, because we know that we have so many threats out there, guys who are willing to play off ball, and not carry it as much, and just try to communicate as much as we can out there, because there's chances that each guy can step up and make a play. So I think that's something we found early on this season. We're gonna keep doing that, as we go.
Just as far as incorporating everyone, you had an interesting challenge as well, coming from the NLL, not the end training camp and everything like that. How have you found that you were able to kind of make a seamless transition? And did you find that like the box game helped you, or is it something you kind of had to overcome to get ready for Water Dog season?
I think the box game has helped tremendously. Your mindset that you have of shift in, shift out, of just going out there and trying to make a play. You only, are out on the floor for 30 seconds in the box game. And, when you get to the field, field game, it's a little bit longer. I know the face-off's 32, but, you have that time to settle in, play as a unit. And, I think that's kind of where I mentally have made that switch of playing, that kind of 52-second, let's swing the ball around, let's get back in the groove, and rather than just run and gun like the box game is. So I think mentally that's been a huge success for myself, is slowing the game down, and you know, and it's helped helped me tremendously, just knowing that, you know, you see different lanes, you're able to, you have the room to dodge more, and you know, and play in different situations. And because the box game's so tight, you know, when you come out here, you're able to find success when you're playing open spaces.
What's it like reuniting with some of your Cornell boys? Gavin coming in free agency this offseason. You drafted your boy Brendan Staub this college draft. But what's it like playing with those guys in the DN? And just, all right, we did have your roommate, Hugh Kelleher, on the pod, of course, a couple weeks back. Any chirping going along in the curse of the Kelleher household?
Of course, a little chirping. You know, we've talk all the time about you know, each other's games, each other's locker room, stuff like that. So you know, it's funny being you know, in the same area with him and not on the same team. It's a little bit different than what we're used to in NLL, but it's been incredible to have Brendan, Gavin together. You know, just having that time that we spent together at school, you know, was amazing. And you know, we're able to you know, have a great, I guess, kind of time together at school and wearing the Cornell uniform, and then now being able to do it as Water Dogs is pretty special. And you know, just having Brendan's parents come to games, Gavin's family around too, it's definitely made this season you know, a ton of fun.
Well, speaking of your roommate, we did have him on the podcast a few weeks ago. He said at that time the NLL Cup had not made its way down to New York City. Have you guys gotten your hands on it yet? Any plans?
Not yet. The boys had a great celebration this past weekend, celebrating Kayla Day for them into the long weekend. So now hopefully soon we'll be able to get the cup down to our apartment.
We can't wait. We're going to keep checking up on you for when it does, CJ. We touched on all your other offensive pieces here a little bit, just, but between you and Mike, your kind of chemistry has grown each game. From the outside, it looks like. Just what's it like kind of forming that and playing alongside and getting to know him off field?
It's great. He's such a special player who can make an impact, you know, every single time he has the ball on his stick. And I think I've noticed windows and opportunities to try to, you know, help myself out and be in positions that, you know, aren't in his way when he's dodging really hard and trying to be, you know, open for him. And we were able to find that, you know, these past couple weeks. And, you know, we're just obviously continuing to build, and our chemistry is getting, you know, getting better as we go. So, and then hanging out off the field is, of course, helps a lot too. And, you know, he's you know, lighthearted, loves having a great time. And, you know, I'm super lucky to be teammates with him.
So, we got to let you go in a second. So, I wanted to make sure we asked this question. A few weeks ago, you were being interviewed after a game, and you mentioned there's no chirping amongst cursed staring games. Is that strictly a professional lacrosse thing, or has that always been the case when you guys were growing up and everything?
Of course, when we go out on the field or granted working out together, there's some words that are exchanged, but yeah. Okay, right. It's not always smiles and, you know, no chirps, but we're not the kind of players, I guess, to do that all the time to each other. So, yeah, pretty funny that, you know, nothing's been too deep yet.
You guys got to your material, that's for sure.
Yep, yeah, definitely.
CJ, you're a sweetheart. You're one of the faces of the league. We appreciate you joining the show, and good luck out there in the accuracy chat.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
We now welcome on to the PLL Happy Hour podcast, Joey Spallina, third overall pick of the Maryland Whipsnakes. Joey, coming off your first All-Star game appearance, how you feeling?
It was great, right? It's just a ton of fun to just be out there, you know, with guys you might never play with, you know, guys like Sowers and stuff like that, you know. It was great. I'm not a big like All-Star game guy. Like I like to play games that kind of mean something.
He's a gamer,
but yeah, you know, it was awesome.
Was it kind of hard to turn off? Maybe, you know, maybe don't ride as aggressively, or do you?
No. That's just not the way that I am. Like I played hard, and you know, it's just, you have to get after, because like that's how you got hurt, kind of thing, right?
Totally. Yeah. You guys came up short against the West today, but It was like a fun experience. You know, it's not about winning and losing per se in the All-Star game as much as that is against your antithesis for Joey Spallina. But you guys are towards the top of the East standings, the Whiff Snakes, right up there with the Water Dogs. And it's a tight East, man. New York just is completing their homecoming sweep.
Yeah.
What do you make of what you guys have to do the second half of the season?
Yeah, you know, I think these last couple of games, I don't think we've particularly played well. I don't think we've played our best lacrosse. You can ask anybody on our team that, I think they'll agree. But you know, I think at the end of the end of the day, like this league is it's so tight, and every game is a one goal, two goal game, right? You know, it's very rare, you know, do you beat a team up? But you know, it's just doing like the little things, you know, those kind of things that we did in our Baltimore homecoming, just kind of getting back to that. So
I assume you probably had a lot of understanding about what pro lacrosse can be like. Obviously, the MLL ties coming up. Has there been anything that still kind of stood out, or some lessons you've learned?
Yeah,
thus far?
Yeah, you know, I think being with Rob, right? Like you. He's kind of like that older brother, you know, so, you know, just being with him all the time, and, you know, you kind of learn quick, you know, like even just being around the game, right? Like it's like, you still have to learn some stuff, and the only thing that I really didn't realize was that fast. It really is that fast is the 32.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It is like all of a sudden you look and it's like, all right, like 10 seconds left. You got to go shoot, right? You know? But it's just an awesome blast. So
it's like, all right, B, let's start.
B is awesome.
But no, you say you guys hit the floor running so well in Baltimore, right? And you know, that pretty ball movement was just so fun to watch. You pick Boston apart. It's obviously your first weekend as a pro going against the two teams that kind of passed on the. General was a fun storyline to follow. You guys going 2-0. How much does that feel you first off, and just second, just like what do you have to do to go back to kind of playing that great team?
Yeah, you know, like listen, no hard feelings, right? This is a business, you know, that they, you know, they felt that, you know, they had some other needs, and you know, those two guys are great players, you know, so it's you know, it's just the way that's sports are. But you know, I think to get back to it, right, like we've seen glimpses of it these past couple games, right, where, you know, there's been spurts where, you know, we've been playing that kind of ball, and then there's, you know, times where, you know, it might not look great, but you know, I think we're slowly figuring it out, right? It's, you know, it's definitely tough, and you would have thought, like, I'm like our first two games, and there's so many new guys in there that those would have been the games, right, that, you know,
right,
kind of didn't go great, but you know, like it's like we're slowly building up that chemistry, and you know, it's, you know, it's a great group of guys. So
maybe any other guys on the team, you know, we've talked about your connection with Rob throughout the years, anybody else who you kind of maybe didn't know at all? But then you get a team now, kind of connected with.
Yeah, Aiden Carroll is an absolute beauty, and he's a great guy, great player. Him, Adam Potris is the man, and Colin Heacock too he's one of like my favorite guys on the team. He is hilarious. But yeah, it's, you know, the entire team's been great. You know, it's definitely interesting, right? You know, being the rookie and the new guy, right, kind of implementing yourself in the locker room, right? You know, kind of where you might not have, you know, where in college, right, like it takes about a week because you're with each other every day,
right?
Where here, right, it's more of like the extra stuff, and you know, just really getting to know the guys, stuff's been great. So
it was cool to see you and Billy obviously assisting your first goal. It was also so neat. But yeah, man, we got the intel from CJ what his strategy is going into this accuracy challenge. Obviously, this podcast will come out afterwards, but we'll see if yours pays off. Well, what's your mindset?
My mindset is I'm going to aim at the top left corner. You know, you only get 20 balls, I think, or something like that, right? So I don't really think like the time and stuff matters. I think it's more of just, you know, kind of taking a shot by shot, kind of finding just like a flow, which, you know, I think after shot two or three, right, you know, you're kind of in that flow, you're scooping it, shooting. But yeah, I'm just going to hammer that top left as best I can.
Twelly.
Speaking of CJ, we're talking to him about trash talk amongst family members. What is the surfing situation? Oh, you do the split.
It is. Yeah, that's awesome. It is great, to be honest. You know, I think what's awesome is, like, you know, like we all play together, and you know, I think that's what made college lacrosse just so much more fun, right? Because it's, you know, you're out there with Jake and Brett, and you know, you're able to just absolutely trash talk other teams and other guys, and you know. You know that for a fact. You always got somebody in your corner. And if you guys have seen any scrum or fight or anything, the first guy off the bench that's got my back is number one. Jake, you guy flies in no matter what. If you watch the Notre Dame game, he's literally the first guy off the bench. It was hilarious. And then we got in that big brawl against Denver. It was kind of tough to tell on the screen, which is probably for the better, to be honest. But it was, you know, Jake and Brett were literally the first guys that were following me. I was like, you guys are the best. But yeah, it was just awesome.
It's so fun. The guy would protect the big room. He was like, hands up. We're saying this in the backdrop of the WLL All-Star Game, the first season for the full inaugural field season for them. Obviously, Alexa having such a great rookie season down there at Clemson. Yeah. Well, what's it like seeing these girls compete at this level? I know some Stony Brook highs with Joe obviously playing in this, but well, what's it like seeing these girls compete?
Yeah, it's sick. These girls are skilled. They're going way harder than we went, for which is not a shock to anyone. But yeah, it's cool. You know, I know as we're even talking, I just saw a pretty sick goal by I think it was Rachel Clark. But yeah, it's unreal, right? These girls are great. They're all absolute studs. So,
just lastly, Joey, 4th of July weekend, being here at Navy, what was the whole experience like for you? Not that it's over yet.
No, I mean, I legitimately felt like I was a kid again, and you know, being at these, you know, I was lucky enough with my dad to go to a bunch of these. You know, so it was just great.
Joey, appreciate it.
Awesome, guys. All right,
thanks for dropping by.
Bye, guys.
So great interviews there from CJ and Joey. Rosie, what did you like from what Joey and CJ had to tell us?
I gotta say, I love Joey being able to admit that he has no off switch and is just no matter what he's doing, he's competing 100% at all times, even an exhibition game like this.
He doesn't like the exhibition stuff. He's a gamer. He likes to compete. You can tell CJ as well. The East did not come out on top, but definitely a very compelling Eastern Conference standings. To break it all down and the big picture of it all, we bring in Terry Foley. Terry, what's going on?
What's going on, fellas? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First appearance of the podcast season this summer for you, Terry. Just how are you feeling joining the PLF?
Nervous, sober, tired. I don't know. How do you want me to feel? I feel relieved that we're at halftime here of this WLL All-Star game, and knock on no visible wood, there's we haven't had any storm delays despite the heat. So yeah, I feel great, Kev.
And that's a great way to feel, of course, because we are on the back of some great news for the league overall. The Series E funding, $100 million in investment into the PLL and WLL just announced the recent week. Terry, what are your overall thoughts and big picture analysis of this announcement coming away from talking to the Mike Rabel in the wake of it?
Yeah, for sure. Well, so I guess, you know, I'll tease that hopefully over the course of the next little bit here, we'll have an opportunity to have a conversation with Paul and Mike. Because I do think that this is kind of a two-part story. And so far, you know, the first part has been really focused on the fundraise. I think that there is a little bit more around the secondary to be told. And you know, it's kind of hard for me to frame my thoughts, you know, knowing that there's a little bit more kind of still to be reported. But I think ultimately, the lead of the story that I wrote to try to synopsize this for lacrosse fans who don't fancy themselves financial analysts was that, you know, whenever I would have a conversation with like a industry observer or a hardcore pro lacrosse fan, and they would contrast it against Major League Lacrosse, they would say some version of, you know, the PLL does a great job with their broadcast and they do a great job with social media. And, you know, I'm not here to dispute that, but I am here to say that while, you know, if you think those are the two things that they do best, I would contend. I disagree. I think the thing that they have done best over the course of the last 8 years, dating back to 2018, when they started to structure the organization, is they have cultivated a diverse, highly engaged capital table with a very long view. And secondly, they've structured their organization so that they can be growth minded at profitability's sake. It's very much a tech startup mentality. And that's something that Mike's background is very familiar with. And I think this is another, but probably the most extreme example of that. And I think that the tea leaves are very easy to read because over the last 6-8 months, you have noticed in their public comments a dramatic difference in how clear and direct and candid they are that they're going to sell franchises. And so I think through that lens, it's fair to interpret that this is the last of these fundraising rounds that are going to be structured like this. And it's meant to continue to keep the growth of pace with this pinnacle moment of lacrosse being the Olympics of 2028 forthcoming and all the intention that that will bring. And then also to position it so that when they are selling franchises, they're doing it at the peak, not necessarily of the market that's uncontrollable and unknowable, but at the peak of what they've accomplished. And I think when you look at the crossing the threshold or Rubicon of the media rights deal, renewing with ESPN, and one of the things that's so important about that is, you know, when you do something, I always think about this in the difference of a college coach getting hired versus getting his contract extended. When you do something for the first time, it's speculative. When you do it the second time, it is a endorsement or condemnation, if you don't do it, of the job performance. And I think that for ESPN to renew at a higher annual rate than they were previously at with the PLL is not only a significant endorsement, but then also to come in with a subsequent investment on the back of having done that investment a year ago as part of the rights renewal, you know, speaks even more directly and clearly to a level of sophisticated analysis. It's saying, you know, we think we see a return on this. And I think that, again, a little bit difficult to talk about the returns without talking about, you know, some of that kind of secondary element that I teased earlier. But those are my big extra thoughts.
You feel like, just, you know, based on hearing the face of the news itself, because, you know, any sort of press release isn't going to get into each and every crack of the deal. Do you feel like the reception you have observed from, you know, people who aren't privy to any sort of information has been a fairly accurate one? Or is there a lot of sort of misunderstanding behind this or any sort of financial deal of this sort?
Yeah, I mean, there's always obviously going to be a lot of misunderstanding. And I don't think that that's something that like the purveyor of the misunderstood point or point of view can really be criticized for, especially if they're not in possession of all the information. I think it's, you know, when there's, you know, some kind of gray area, people are going to be left to their own interpretations. And, you know, it's kind of the normal course of things. Rolling that forward, I don't think that there's like one overwhelming incorrect interpretation. I think, you know, what I saw was, you know, people properly identifying this as further assurance of the security of the league in the intermediate and long term. And I think that's kind of been the crux of all of these fundraisers. And then I do think that their four buckets of growth are accurate and they're already on display. You know, they talked about expanding the PLL season. They've already done that by going from, you know, 14 weeks to 16 weeks and adding 2 weeks to the regular season. You know, they talked about the WLL. They've already done that, right? We're watching the WLL story and they're halfway through their inaugural summer campaign. You know, certainly the youth participation space and the storytelling components of it are a little bit more diffuse. Maybe a little bit more difficult to wrap your arms around, maybe a little bit more intermediate and long-term as well. But I think ultimately what it does, what it also does is a genuflex or nods the cap to the things that you know, this group, this leadership group clearly cares about. You know, they care about storytelling because they understand the, you know, the value of enterprise value growth through brand development and product development by virtue of storytelling. You know, what that looks like remains to be seen. And then when it comes to, you know, kind of the youth and participation strategy, that is definitely a long tail function of just knowing that you're developing your fans of tomorrow by getting involved with them when they're on their playing days. And, you know, you saw a little bit of it already that the PLL Juniors created or launched a WL Juniors property. You know, that's an opportunity to get PLL uniforms, WL uniforms on young players and start to build that affinity with them and their parents. You know, they have sixes leagues all over the country that are growing as well. So, you know, there's a lot of meat on that bone, but I still think there's a lot more that they intend to do that, you know, is probably a little bit farther into the future.
I think the other maybe misunderstanding, if you can call it that, in that label that comes out with news like this, when they are so direct about team sales and that direction that they want to go back in, is the notion, oh, this is, we're just going back to the MLL. And the idea is they are building on the foundation that the MLL set out, and with tons more momentum and the overall storytelling and everything that you just mentioned, Terry, that I think is, it's super exciting. But,
well, hold on, before we move off of that point, I think the core distinction is, you know, not all team ownership groups are created equal. And, you know, we're sitting in the venue that the Chesapeake Greyhawks played in for more than 10 years. And Bernie Kelly was a really good owner, but there was enough diversity among the MLL ownership groups, both in terms of how they wanted to operate, what their access to capital was, what their willingness to carry a loss might have been, that, you know, there was always going to be a little bit of tension there. But it wasn't even, you know, in my conversations with MLL owners and even, you know, MLL executives, the issues were less around the individual ownership groups, and they were more around the limitations that the league had put on what owners could do in order to generate their own revenue. And then really more than anything else, it was that broadcast rights opportunity, right? You know, and the fact that it was a time by league for the first 10 to 15 years, and then it moved into an OTT league, and then it moved into a subscription-based OTT league way ahead of time, right? You know, I mean, I've talked a lot with my friends who are into F1 and maybe a few that are into MLS about how the move to Apple TV has changed their consumption habits relative to when it was on ESPN. And that's now. That's in the preponderance of smart TVs, right? You know, when you were talking about requiring a Kindle or a Roku just in order to be able to access an app on your phone, or I'm sorry, on your television, like it was just another kind of bridge too far for the for Live Sports Network as a viable distribution play. I think that was ultimately probably the biggest. I mean, not probably. That was the death knell of Major League Lacrosse. So point is that, like, PLL has it incumbent on them to be more diligent in how they assess prospective ownership groups. But they also have this cornerstone foundation of how the league is going to generate revenue, and that is their media rights deal.
100%. I do want to get into some of the on-field stuff because we have gotten some six games for all but two teams. They played five games, the two teams being the Philadelphia Water Dogs and Denver Outlaws, two of the foremost contenders for this year's PLL title. Just in terms of parity overall, close games, inconsistencies, what have you seen from kind of the East versus West, this first half of the season?
So I think, you know, in California, we saw what looked like a league that was shaping up to be pretty hierarchical collapse on itself a little bit. You know, specifically for me, it was around the Boston Cannon. So I felt like, you know, having seen them really struggle a couple times over the course of the early part of the season, we're just not at the level. And then, you know, by that token, the Redwoods having an opportunity to, you know, sweep it home and really kind of separate themselves. The Cannons being the Redwoods is either going to end up looking like the biggest outlier result of the season or a precursor towards, to your point, what is going to be a league where you're going to have a bunch of teams finish 6-4, 5-5, and 4-6. And if it's the latter, and I feel like that's the sticking point that I'm at right now, because it's effectively where we are at this point in the season, it's just a really hard lead to analyze because the margins are so narrow. The margins are always already really narrow, and that makes it hard to analyze. And sometimes we have teams that go 7-3, 8-2, or 9-1. And so, you know, on that basis, at this point, you know, I don't feel any more comfortable picking a champion than I did at the beginning of the year.
What would you say your initial impressions of some of the rookies we've seen, both as far as on-field production and, you know, every year we always seem to have, you know, maybe an interest in perhaps anointing someone who can kind of carry a mantle as being, you know, an on or off-field kind of, you know, proponent of the league, spokesperson of the league, person to carry like that. Who has really stood out to you as, you know, potential just – who seems built for it?
I'm so glad you framed it that way, because to me, it's the perfect answer to any question about rookies that I would have right now. And I think about it in the context of your first guest on this podcast. When CJ Kearst won a national championship for Cornell, it surprised nobody. He was a golden boy. He was a top 10 recruit. You know, he was the preseason Twarton favorite. Now, he was injured, and that very much limited his rookie season in PLL and their ability to take advantage and capitalize on that brand heat in his first campaign. When Chad Palumbo, who did not win the Twarton, won a national championship and is now on, you know, one of the more remarkable heaters that we've seen from a rookie in recent PLL memory, it was surprising. I mean, this was a guy that we had debates about in January, whether or not he was a midfielder or an attackman for Princeton. I mean, you know, Pipunano was, according to the Inside Lacrosse staff, going to be a Twarden finalist. Not actually, but that was not that far off from the way that we were touting him. Now, it didn't come at Chad's expense. We predicted that he was going to be the midfield of the year in the preseason. But it is a reflection of the fact that, you know, if we were having a candid conversation, the Inside Lacrosse staff thought Chad was probably the fourth best offensive player on his team heading into this season. And now you look at it and you're like, is there a more likable guy in the PLL between the crazy shit he does on the field? I mean, air gate, like I wrote about it in my game story for this All-Star game, like to attempt an air gate and fail and have it be as funny as it was is just such a reflection of what we already know about him, which is, you know, setting aside his incredible story of beating cancer and getting through that, he's so charismatic and so genuinely engaged. If he's not athlete funny, he is legitimately funny. And more than that, like his humor is only, you know, the second or third best reason that you want to put him on camera, right? The number one reason is because he's going to coin terms for your team's postseason run in your league championship game. The kid has a mind, a voice, and a face for broadcasting. And I think while he is putting Helen on over it and scoring really creative goals, the ceiling that he has for breaking through is pretty high.
Brazen Verosti going into the second half of the season will be fun to watch. I just need to see Palumbo with CJ Kearst at some point. If it's at the pro level, if it's next year in Japan for suiting up for the red, white, blue, give us that lefty wing action where we can just get those two beauties together, because those two personalities together can't beat.
There's a lot of smiling, no doubt about it.
Too much smiling for the opposition to handle, perhaps. The second half of the season starts in Chicago. It's going to be a fun weekend at Northwestern Medicine Field at Martin Stadium, site of the Women's Division I Final Four. Some really good matchups. Just to go through pretty quickly here at the end of this podcast, Terry and Rosie. Starting with the Philadelphia Water Dogs versus California Redwoods and Utah Archers versus New York Atlas on Friday night. Saturday, we've got Denver versus Boston, and then the night game, Saturday Night Live in Chicago, Maryland versus Carolina. The WOL game, Maryland versus New York, going to be another classic. Rosie, what game are you looking forward to most in Week 8?
Oh, man. You know, I really want to see the Boston Cannons back on the field and see what they have. If they've built something, you know, you want to see if the last game was something they could take away and, you know, apply some lessons from. Usually that's something we say after a loss, but I think the same can be said from a win, right? Have they found something they can bottle and replicate, or was this kind of a last gasp, maybe, you know, trying to get one more thing together and maybe pulled off a miracle? They could be right back at it to make things very difficult for the rest of the East moving forward. And, you know, I also want to see how they bounce back after this this week off, a little bit of time, if they can, you know, kind of keep the momentum going.
Yeah, the rare bounce back after a win. Let's see how they can do it. Because are they frauds or are they not? Okay, can they get back in this Eastern Conference?
Well, there's no way they can be frauds because they're terrible. The question is whether or not they're better than terrible.
Well, listen, you mentioned the 14-goal win against Philly as the season outlier. It's definitely proved to be so far.
Hell, I mentioned the Red Wings. Wait, the win over the Red Wings in California.
Got it. Which is also an outlier.
Right.
I think I would contend Boston over Philly was.
Sure. Well, and
that's more shocking.
And now we can get to the game that I'm looking the most forward to, which is Water Dogs versus Red Wings. And, you know, for me, it's the best on paper matchup. It is the matchup of the two teams that are most likely to be contenders. And I think that this is a little bit of a contender off. Now, I don't think that there's anybody that's going to like steal the mantle from either of them such that like they won't be contenders if they lose. But at the same time, to the earlier point, like whoever wins is going to re-accelerate their opportunity to have that 7-3 into type season and create a hierarchy in this league whereby you have clear favorites going into September in ways that right now it just doesn't appear that you do.
No doubt. It's the fascinating trajectory of this Redwood squad where you have a group that this last podcast, Rosie and I were like, all right, this is a Western Conference semifinal preview. Book the Outlaws getting the bye. But the game I'm looking forward to most is this, the Utah Archers versus New York Atlas matchup Friday night under lights. It's going to be electric, kind of two fallen giants for different reasons. You know, Utah having that subpar season last year full of injuries. They are struggling with injuries yet again this season with Tom Schreiber and Grant Amon still out. Can they get ever fully healthy this season? Because the defense is doing their part. They're starting to give up more goals recently, towards the second half of the first half of the season. But New York that just really found ways to win in App Hofstra without Jeff Teat, without Danny Logan, without Trevor Baptiste, three of their captains. Can they continue to do so? Can Connor Schellenberger continue his MVP form in Chicago? It's going to be quite the matchup.
Yeah, to that note, that game that we just previously saw from the Archers, you know, giving up 11 goals to the Water Dogs team, is that more indicative of the Water Dogs having everybody in the lineup but not quite understanding what to do yet? Or how much credit do you give the Archers for, you know, just being the Archers defense and Brett Dobson in goal? And how much can that apply to a further matchup? Like, what's the conversion rate there? You know, 11 goals against the Water Dogs equals how many against the Atlas moving forward?
It's a great goalie matchup. And I think we could see it. Entman had 13 saves in the first half of this All-Star game. Dobson takes on the MVP.
Well, and did you talk about the relay race?
We did not mention the relay race.
So the relay race was one of the, I think it was between, yeah, it was after the first game, and it was actually like a really cool activation. Started with a kid dressed, I think, as George Washington on a hobby horse delivering a ball to a men's lacrosse player who then threw a 50-yard pass to a women's lacrosse player who then threw a long pass to another women's lacrosse player who had to dodge through a couple of cones, and then they threw it to a men's lacrosse player who was shooting on either Dobson or Entman. And that's a really cool way to end a relay race, because now if your team's behind, if you're Brett Dobson, like, you could just make two or three saves and a lot of time for your team to catch up. That's exactly what happened. Both goalies made a save, and then Enty let in the game winner just a hair before Dobson did. Went to the ground in despair. He was just to leave. how the emotional weight that he carried by that loss. And I think that, yeah, to that point, he was bested twice on Sunday by Dauber and is going to want to get some revenge in Northwest Medicine Stadium at Martin Field.
You can guarantee Liam Metzman is remembering the relay race when he gets on that field in Wingate play.
Just like Joey, he doesn't like to turn it off.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as an exhibition.
Rosie, we've seen Mason Woodward and Emily Harishuk win the fastest shot competitions earlier today. Give us one final prediction here as we end this podcast. Accuracy challenge winding down. Who will take home in moments the best accuracy in the WLL and PLL?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and predict Izzy Skane because I am an unapologetic charting fan and there's nothing on the line if I get her out. And along that same line, I'm going to say Marcus Holman. He
definitely won the preliminary round.
Okay.
He has already advanced. And then I think there was a tie between Chris Cav and Joey for the other one. So I don't know how this is going to shake out in terms of who's shooting next.
All right. Well, provided he's still eligible, okay, I'm going to go with Marcus Holman. He didn't win it last year, but has traditionally been the guy you go to in these sort of events.
Usually the front runner, yes.
Granted, he did lose to Chris Kavanaugh last year. But still, I'm counting on a Holman bounce there.
There you have it. Thank you for listening to this edition of the PLL Happy Hour podcast. If you like what you heard, share with a friend. Leave a review and check back here on InsideLacrosse.com for more PLL. Okay.